You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
Yeah, rolling along. Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. We just heard Christine mention it again. We were talking about it. The Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads have been stolen. And I just continue to wonder, what does a person do with 20,000 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads? Like, that strikes me as very difficult hot merchandise to move because it is a very niche market. Right?
Not just the object, but 20,000 of them.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, oh, I could sell 5 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads easily. I can't sell 20,000 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads one at a time. Like, I could sell them all, but I can't sell them one at a time. And if you sell them by the thousand, I have to believe that the police are going to figure this thing out pretty fast.
I'm reading from a local story here. It looks like the bobbleheads arrived in California. So presumably they were shipped overseas to California.
A lot of those things come from Asia.
I'm imagining so. And somehow between California and Pittsburgh, they've been stolen.
So they were stolen on the transit from California to Pittsburgh, or maybe like on the dock in California.
It says had been stolen after its arrival in California. That's all I have.
I'm being told there's an update. Go ahead, Cam.
Christine Lisi pointed this out to me. I don't know when this was posted, but there is a Jaromir Jagr bobblehead available on eBay for $350 right now.
Well, this is what I don't understand. Like, did this just go on there because people said, let's just say for the sake of argument that this is not, whoever is selling this is not the person who stole them all. I can't believe that whoever stole 20,000 bobbleheads thought their first idea was, I'll go on eBay and sell one of them for $350. So let's say this is just another person who has a Jaromir Jagr bobblehead and sees an opportunity. I think this is smart. Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads just became the talk of the town. Everyone in America is talking about it. Wouldn't you like to have one? I'll sell you mine for $350.
And I'm guessing it just has a magnificent mullet on it, right? Isn't that his thing? Like, they have like the big hair and
he had the hair.
Yeah, the lettuce is hanging out the back of the helmet.
That's going to be a beautiful bobblehead.
But once again, I go back to that. Like, where are you keeping 20,000 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads? Like, do you have a big farm? Like a
Bitcoin farm? It's $7 million if he sells 20,000 of them for $350 each.
What do you mean a Bitcoin farm?
Isn't that what they call like a collection of Bitcoin?
But isn't that like not real?
It's not a Bitcoin farm, it doesn't actually take up any space.
Yeah,
it's not tangible.
So I don't think they're stored.
No, it's the opposite of that. I need space for 20,000 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads.
These aren't virtual bobbleheads.
No, these are real. Bubba, where would you keep them? Like, we don't have room for them at ESPN. We have 9 billion acres in Bristol, Connecticut.
Airport hangar is probably the safest place.
That's what I mean. Who has an airport hangar handy? Like, who's just got an airport hangar?
These villains that stole it, clearly.
I mean, someone obviously views that 18,000 is the number that they ordered, by the way. 18,000 bobbleheads.
Someone has 18,000 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads. And I think your solution, your theory was the best one. This was a different crime gone wrong. Like, someone thought they were stealing something else entirely, like drugs. Something you could easily sell one at a time, right, for a huge profit. How'd we do? Oh, we're going to rob this guy. There's a shipment. Kilos and kilos and kilos of cocaine are going to be coming in. We're going to get him. Okay, boom. Tony, you got this one. Frankie, you got that one. Izzy, you got that one. Okay, boom. We got the truck. We got everything. Pull over. What do we? Oh, wait a minute. It's 18,000 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads. Well, now what the hell are we?
You thought these were the Messiers.
What? You're an idiot. What are we going to?
Should we take it anyway?
What do we do now? Well, that's the thing. Why would you just give them back?
We're going to dump them in the Pacific.
Let's sell them on eBay for $350.
If you actually, right now, if you just came to me and said, Greeny, I'm going to give you the option of having 18,000 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads. Or not having 18,000 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads, I'd rather not have 18,000 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads. because I don't have anywhere to keep them. I mean, I can barely find a place to keep my golf clubs. I just moved into an apartment in New York. I had this big house in Connecticut. I used to have all this space. Now I live in an apartment. My golf clubs, I can't find a place to keep my golf clubs. I don't have space for 18,000 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads.
And now our tax dollars are being poured into this project to find them, to rescue them.
Well, as well, they should be.
The pack, of course.
We can't allow this crime just to stand.
No, it can't go unnoticed. And also, do you have to now make 18,000 new ones? Or are you going to use the stolen ones?
Well, I think you're going to use the stolen ones if you can get them back.
Who knows who had their hands on those?
But what does that even mean?
Like, I mean, who knows what happens?
Going to do with them?
I mean, like, I don't know. You wouldn't eat food off of someone else's plate.
No, but these are bobbleheads. What? I mean, other people have been handling the bobbleheads. No matter. You're suggesting now because they've fallen into criminal hands that they're no longer sanitary.
They're dirty.
No, I want.
I don't want my hands bloody. I want a new bobblehead.
I don't. They're not making. They're not manufacturing 18,000 new bobbleheads. I don't know exactly how this is going to go, but it's not going to go like that. This is Greeny. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We're live at the Seaport, brought to you by Chase. And this reminder that starting stronger starts at AutoZone, where they've got battery solutions in the form of free battery testing, free battery charging, and replacement batteries that fit your needs. That's what makes them America's number one battery destination. Get in the zone with AutoZone.
I need you to listen carefully.
I just want you to know.
All right, I've got a little bit of a beef here with sportsbetting.ag. What is that exactly?
Just an offshore book where you can bet on things that aren't, you know, typical games and things of that nature.
Okay. So they have listed odds for the next commissioner of Major League Baseball. So Rob Manfred has announced that the current contract extension that he just did, we talked about this whenever it happened, a month ago or so, is going to be his last one. So he's got, I think it's 5 more years.
Yeah, through the 2020s, yeah.
As the commish. And then he is going to step aside, and someone new will be the commissioner of baseball. And I told you 15 years ago or whenever it was that he first got this job when Bud was retiring that I wanted to be the commissioner of baseball. We had this whole campaign on Mike and Mike. And I try very hard not to recreate any of our old bits here because that show was of itself and this one is a new one. But this isn't a bit. I would like to be the commissioner of baseball. So they've put together odds. And they've got Theo Epstein as the favorite at plus 400. And then a bunch of other names that I don't know. I'm assuming these are executives in baseball's front office.
That's right.
That makes sense to me. But they've put some ridiculously outlandish names on this. So would it have killed them to throw me a bone and put me on this list?
Who are you comparing yourself to here?
Well, they have among the names on this list, Barack Obama, Greg Sankey, Bob Iger, Bob Costas, Jason Stark, Tim Kirkchen, Jeff Passan, and Chris Mad Dog Russo. Now, let me just, I love Chris Mad Dog Russo. He's one of my favorite people, and he's one of the people who inspired me to want to do what I do for a living, and he has been nothing but gracious and giving and generous, and I consider him a friend. But I would definitely have a better chance of being commissioner than he would. If the owners are going to bring if it was only the two of us, if just the two of us walked in and all the owners are sitting in there, and they said, well, you got to pick, I don't care what else you thought you wanted. You got to pick between these two guys. I'm a lock for that job.
Why, you're not moving the Giants back to New York?
Well, I mean, think about all the things he would say. I mean, we were actually talking about this earlier today. Like, Kmart had a nice picture with Mad Dog's wife and his daughter. Just imagine coming home from school and your dad is Mad Dog. Like, it would just be the strangest life to have, right? Like, how was school today, baby? Oh, good to see you.
What?
You got a B on an arithmetic? What are you talking about here? I told you. Oh, Bob Cousy dribbled his left hand. I mean, it would be a very strange person to be your father, but he would not, I don't think he would interview as well for this job as I would.
So you're suggesting that at minimum, you should be listed at 150-1 to be the next commissioner.
Well, if he's 150-1, why couldn't I be? They have Derek Jeter on this list. Tim Kirkchen? I mean, he'd be a good Jeff Passan.
He'd be a good commissioner. They'd both be
Jason
good commissioners.
Jason Stark. Well, they'd be fine commissioners. I don't know. Why would they be better at it than
what's
me?
What's bizarre is that almost none of these people have publicly said they want to do the job, and they stiffed you by not even putting you on the list.
How about Bob Costas?
Bob would be a good commissioner too. But we need someone progressive, forward-thinking, someone like you. Like, you see the future for baseball. You see the technology piece of this coming into fruition. You've seen this from how the PR of all of this works and stuff. I like the idea of your pitch. You've made a very good one over the years. I think you're just as likely to get the job as Mad Dog Russo.
You know what the first thing I would do is? the first thing I would do if I became the commissioner of baseball is at PNC Park in Pittsburgh, I would have Jaromir Jagr bobblehead day because I've got 18,000 bobbleheads that I can distribute for free. Because, but people don't know this, but I'm admitting it now. I'm the bobblehead thief. I'm the mastermind behind the Jagr bobblehead crime, the great Jagr bobblehead caper of 2024. No, I think I could be a good commissioner of Major League Baseball, and I would like to throw my hat in the
ring. I want to see you on the odds board, at least. I want to be able to play the number. I want to be able to put some money on you to be the next commissioner. That's all I ask.
Oh, they have a bunch of names on here I don't know. But, I mean, like a lot of these are like sports executive types, like Nick Kahn.
College commissioners.
Dave Checkitz. Yeah, Greg Sankey. Greg Sankey is the commissioner of the SEC. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's leaving that to go be the commissioner of baseball.
No, but he might be more likely to get the job than you because he does that kind of work.
But the difference between him and me is if they offered him the job, he might turn it down, and I would take it.
He might turn it down.
How is Ryan Howard, of all people,
Ryan Howard is on this list, yeah.
That's like, a bizarre one.
Like, why is he so much higher than anyone else? Like,
he's got very short odds.
He has very short odds.
Like, Ryan Howard, they're saying, has shorter odds to be the next commissioner than Cal Ripken.
A random former player has...
He's not random.
Random, how dare you?
He's not random.
But he doesn't strike me as an...
He's pretty random. Ryan Howard, out of nowhere?
Like, he's the most likely former player to be the next commissioner.
I'm looking over the list. I think he is.
That's what they're saying.
That's not... That can't be.
Name.
I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm saying I don't like the odds.
He's the 11th most likely person to be commissioner, Ryan Howard.
And the most likely former player. Very strange. Tony Clark also at 22-1 shouldn't be on the list. He hates this job. Like, Tony Clark would never do this.
Yeah. Brett Yormark is on here. He's the commissioner of the Big 12. Mm-hmm.
Tony Clark would do it just to fold and cancel baseball.
Steve Garvey is on the list. Isn't he running for the Senate in California
or something?
Yeah, he's
busy doing politics, so he's out.
He's like a...
So you might be able to jump in and take his spot.
I believe he won the Republican nomination for a Senate seat in California. Doug Glanville... Mark Atanasio, he's an owner, right? Was he on the Brewers? He owns one of the teams.
That's right.
He owns our team. Tony Petitti, he's now the commissioner of the Big Ten. He came from baseball. I don't know. I think
You know a lot of these people.
So are people I know.
Yeah.
I could be in their cabinet. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they could put together like I could have a role in this. I just don't know that it would be, you know, the role I want, which is I want to be everybody's boss.
You
want to
run?
All kidding aside. So you love baseball more than anyone I know. If I made you commissioner for a day and you had unchecked, unlimited power, you could make one decision. There's one thing you can do in baseball. What would it be?
It's such a hard question.
And
It
would be not undoable. I mean, it would be undoable. Like,
it'd be
they
permanent.
Couldn't change it back.
It would be permanent.
That's a better word.
I would like to tinker with Major League Baseball's postseason format. As a Phillies fan, the last couple of years, I've seen my team not win its division and then go off and have much better postseason runs than either the Braves or the Dodgers. Now, obviously, I've enjoyed that. But over the course of 162, the Braves and the Dodgers were way better than we are. What I think Major League Baseball should do is further incentivize regular season success by making it more difficult for wild card teams to advance in the playoffs. So, for example, the bye that we have right now, to me, doesn't strike me as good enough. Sometimes that break actually hurts. I think what we need to do is create a system where if you don't win your division, if you're further down the standings, let's say we have a six-team playoff field in each league like we do now, you're going to have a much more difficult path. So you're not going to get home games. You might have to win, say, two out of three, the way that the NBA has it more structured in its play-in. That's what I'd want to do. I would want to make it exceedingly difficult for you to reach the World Series if you don't have a really, really good regular season. Last year, the Arizona Diamondbacks had a magical run to the championship. All right, they finished second. They lost the World Series to Texas. But over the regular season, Greeny, they were outscored. They had a negative run differential. And the only hurdle they had to overcome was winning a best-of-three series, and then they wound up being in the same boat as everyone else. That's not good enough. I would structure the playoffs in such a way that that is no longer as likely as it is now.
I like it. It wouldn't be the first thing I would do. I'll tell you what my first move would be in a moment. Plus, more trivia for today. Let's go.
Who quarterbacked the last NFL team to have 3,000-yard receivers in the same season? The quarterback of the last team with three players that had 1,000 receiving yards. That is the question.
Ooh, I think I remember this. The answer is next. ESPN Radio. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Greeny, the podcast.
Greeny with you on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance in 30 seconds. So the trivia answer, and then I'll give you my one move as commissioner. But first, I'll tell you, you can secure the seats and the memories this year from Vivid Seats, your home for every slam dunk, slap shot, and stolen base. Vivid Seats celebrates fandom with unbeatable rewards like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. With Vivid Seats rewards, you earn with every purchase. From buzzer beaters to walk-off home runs, Vivid Seats has a great selection and great prices on all the games that matter to you. Just visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN. Hembo trivia, quickly go.
Who quarterbacked the last NFL team to have 3,000-yard receivers in the same season? So the quarterback of the last team with three players that had 1,000 receiving yards in a season.
They do not specifically have to have been wide receivers, we confirmed during the break. You are first up, Bubba.
I have no idea. No, I don't even have a good guess. Ben Roethlisberger.
Ben Roethlisberger is one guess. Cam?
Kurt Warner.
Kurt Warner is an interesting one. Greatest show on turf. Who do Brandon and Jack have?
Jack guessed Matt Ryan. Brandon has no guess.
Okay.
Brandon has no guess. Who's
you have
your
no
guess?
No guess? He has a guess. He says, check your... Just say it, for crying out loud. Herbert? Justin Herbert.
Thanks for the hijack.
Thank you. Justin, check your phone. You can speak to him.
I asked this question 7 minutes ago.
It does not take any time. Okay. I was going to say one thing, and then literally sitting here, a different one popped into my
Who's
head.
Who's that?
I think this happened in Minnesota with Randy Moss, Chris Carter, and Jake Reed 1 year. And what I can't remember, was that the year Dante Culpepper was the quarterback? There was a year there where, like, Randall Cunningham was the quarterback, and he put up really big numbers. I think those were the receivers, but I can't remember the quarterback. I'm going to go with Dante Culpepper. That's my guess.
The correct answer is Kurt Warner.
Yes. But
Kurt Warner is correct.
Not for the greatest show on turf.
Name the receivers, Cam. Name the three players.
Larry Fitzgerald, Anquan Boldin, and Steve Breston.
That's correct.
Wow. I'm sick of this guy.
Whoa.
That means it's more recent than mine. Did I have it right, too, in Minnesota?
No, that did not happen.
Those guys never had 1,000, all three of them?
Those guys never did. It's only happened five times. Most recently, the 2008.
What are the other teams?
Cardinals. The 2004 Colts, that was Harrison, Wayne, and Stokely. the 1995 Falcons, which was Burt Emanuel, Eric Metcalf, and Terrence Mathis,
what?
Which is a tough one. The 89 Skins, Monk, Clark, and Sanders. And then the 1980 Chargers, Charlie Joyner, John Jefferson,
and Kellen Winslow.
And Kellen Winslow.
Yeah, yeah, that was the Air Coryell. Okay, well done.
Well done, Cam.
Good job by Cam there, getting that one right. All right, on we go. I have not done as well in trivia as I would like to have done, which suggests that I just don't know as much about sports as I thought I did. Which is a really deflating thing to have to acknowledge, because it's pretty much my only thing I'm supposed to be good at. Like, no one ever looks at me and says, oh, that Greeny, he's really great at anything else, right? Like, no one has ever said that. My wife hasn't said it. No one has ever said it.
Like one of those smart kids in class that says, I'm not a good test taker.
I'm just not that good. I don't really know much about anything but sports. And as it's turning out, I don't really know that either. So,
well, you do have 18,000 bobbleheads.
The good news is I have 18,000 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads that I can try and sell one at a time for $350 a piece. Once I can finish selling them, I'm going to be very rich, and that should be about the year 2090. Okay, you said the one thing you would change if you could change anything in baseball would be the playoff format. I'll just give you mine. I would enact a rule that all postseason games must be played in daylight. All baseball postseason games would be played in the sunshine. We're not playing these games at night. I get it on a Tuesday and a Wednesday and a Thursday when everyone's got to go to work. But on a Saturday or a Sunday, I want that first pitch at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And let that game end. Or if the games are going to move along as quickly as we have them moving along right now, let these games, you know, start it at 5:30, just like the Super Bowl, and let the game end at 8:30, and that is a dream scenario. And it's a dream scenario for all the young fans you're trying to cultivate, and it's a dream fan for all of us. No one is sitting around going, boy, I wish the Super Bowl kicked off at 9 p.m. or whatever time it is that these postseason games start. So that would be the change that I would make. By the way,
you're saying weekday games?
No, weekend.
Just weekend.
Just all postseason. Did I not say that?
No, you said all postseason games.
Did I say all postseason
games? I didn't hear you say weekend the first time.
Okay, yeah. Then that's not what I meant. I apologize.
Okay.
Weekend postseason games would be played in the daylight.
Got
it would start when the sun is still up.
Be glorious.
And I think
it'd be glorious.
That is, to me, absolutely should happen anyway, but the only way it will is when I enact it, when I am the commissioner of Major League Baseball. By the way, and just another thought jumped to my head, now I just forgot. Oh, I was looking something up. So Hembo and I have a book that's coming out in September, which we've mentioned briefly, and we'll have more time to talk about. And then we have another one that we're working on that'll be for a later time. And I was looking over some notes for that last night. And I happened to look at so this is going to be a major aside here, but the point will become evident to me. Call up just Wikipedia, the 1922 World Series. In 1922, the New York Giants swept the New York Yankees in the World Series. It actually is, they played five games because one of them ended in a tie. But I was looking this up, the reasons that will become obvious when you read the book. That doesn't have anything to do with this conversation. But what will become evident in this conversation is, do you have those games up there? Okay, I want you just to look at the column where it says time of game, not what time it started, but how long the games took to play, and just read those numbers.
I'm going to pull up each of the box scores. These should be recorded.
You looked at it differently. The 1920.
Oh, I see.
Somewhere I saw it, it was all in one spot.
Oh, I got them here. I got him here.
Read how long these games took to play.
Okay, game one, 2 hours and 8 minutes.
Game two,
2 hours and 40 minutes.
Game three.
That's log. 1 hour, 43 minutes.
1 hour and 43. Game four.
1 hour, 54 minutes.
And game five.
Game five was 2 hours and 1 minute.
So, that's how long these World Series games took to play 100 years ago. That just jumped off the page at me. It's presented without comment. I don't really have much more to say about it. I tried to find a way to work it into the book, but what we were writing about has nothing to do with that. So it's just information that I could do absolutely nothing with. But I just thought it was remarkable that more games in the 2022 World Series were played in less than 2 hours than not. And the longest one, which I think ended in a tie. And that's why it went so long. How many innings did they play before they called it?
Oh, I pulled that up.
Yeah, I mean, it took 2 hours and 40 minutes because it ended in a tie. It ended in a tie.
Oh, they only played. They only played 10 innings.
Okay, so let's just say that out loud again. They ended a World Series game in a tie, rather than just continue playing it to its conclusion. They ended it in a tie and just started another one.
The last time we had a sub 2 hour World Series was 1966.
And even that, it surprises me that it was that recently. But anyway, but the point that I'm making, and 1966, was that like that was right around the time that like of Bob Gibson and all those?
That was Dodgers O's that year.
Okay, so that's Jim Palmer and Sandy Koufax and Drysdale. And all right, so I mean, there's probably there were like probably 9 hits in the entire series combined. The pitching was so good.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point that I'm making is, let's just stop and think about that for a minute. I know things were different in the world then, but in 1922... the rule was, if we're still tied at the end of 10 innings of a World Series game, we'll just stop and we'll just start a new one.
Run it back.
And this one will just go down as a tie. It can't contribute.
They started in the daylight, but not light enough.
Well, that's got to be why, right? Because there were no lights then. So the game, it must have gotten too dark. But my point is, rather than pick it up where they were the next day, they just started over again.
And that's how it always was.
That must have really confused Donovan McNabb.
Yeah. That's how they always did it.
Don't tell that to Kyle Juszczyk.
Oh my gosh.
Or any of the San
Kyle
Francisco
Shanahan.
49ers.
Who's to us?
That this game could end in a tie. But that was the way that was done then. And that's a pretty remarkable, like, I'd like to have been in the meeting where they thought that through. All right, guys, it's going to get dark at some point. Who is the Kennesaw Mountain Landers? All right, Kenny, let's have this conversation here.
He got a lot wrong.
Yeah, he was a terrible person. Then name me a better commissioner from that era.
I'm
amazed with myself that I remembered who that was.
It's a good pull.
Okay, give me another early baseball commissioner.
No, he was the commissioner forever.
Okay, fine. So Kennesaw Mountain Landers, a man of a lot of flaws. But let's put that aside for a moment and just suggest that for the purposes of this conversation, they went around the room. All right, guys, we're going to have a World Series. We're going to play a best of seven. It's at one point, it was a best of nine, right?
It was.
This was already a best of seven. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a best of seven. First team to win 4 games is going to be the winner. What are we going to do here? All right. Now, what happens? What happens if it gets dark while one of our games is going on? Here's the best idea we've got. We'll just stop, pretend it never happened, and start a whole new one again the following day. But it doesn't seem to me we could actually finish that game the following day in the daylight. Fire that guy. That's a terrible idea. Let's just start a whole new game tomorrow. I'd like to have been in that conversation and understood, like, do you think someone suggested the continuation?
Did someone suggest the continuation, pick it up from the next day exactly where it ended?
Right.
I don't know.
I wonder if that came up.
For decades, they did it this way.
In the room where it happened.
For maybe hundreds of years, they did it this way.
Right.
It's wild.
They probably were like, we can't do that. We have the other game scheduled. What are you talking about?
That's right. We can't. Whatever happens, we can't play one and a tenth games in the same day.
It's not
and
obvious.
This was, by the way, at a time when they played doubleheaders routinely, right? Mm-hmm. They would play doubleheaders all the time.
All the time.
So we could play 2 games in one day, but we cannot play one and an inning.
Just refuse to ever to pick it up where you left off.
You know, it's interesting because the Golf U.S. Open used to be, up until very recently, you could look up this, what year they changed that. It used to be that if multiple players finished tied for the U.S. Open championship in golf, they would then come back and play 18 holes the following day. It was not, in fact, I think Tiger Woods and Rocco Mediate did that as recently as 2000 and whatever year that was.
It looks like this has only been in place since 2018.
Okay, yeah.
Very recent. Now it's a two-hole aggregate.
That's what I mean. They just do it like everyone else does now. Is they have some much, 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 much shorter way of determining a champion where it gets decided that day.
That was 2008, Rocco.
Yeah, that was
Tiger.
The legendary Tiger versus Rocco, where Tiger needed to make a birdie on 18 to force that playoff. He made one of the great putts I've ever seen in my life, and we had him on Mike and Mike not long thereafter. And it was one of the great lessons I ever learned about golf and about life in general. So Tiger Woods, for those of you who don't remember this, Tiger's playing, Rocco Mediate plays out of his mind. Rocco Mediate, who was a longtime tour player, but I don't think he ever won anything. He certainly never won a major. And he's in the clubhouse about to win the U.S. freaking Open. And I think this was at Torrey Pines, if I'm not mistaken, in La Jolla. And Tiger's the last on the last group in the court, on the golf course. And he goes to the par 5 18th, and he needs to make a birdie in order to force a playoff. I'm doing this from memory, but I'm almost positive I have this right. He hits it in a bunker. He hits it in another bunker. He gets it up onto the green, and he's got to make this putt. It was a long putt. It was not a, it was not, it, this had to have been 15 feet, breaking right to left as memory
feet.
Served.
Mm-hmm.
12 feet. And he gets a, and he makes the putt because he's Tiger Woods, and that's what he does. So sometime thereafter, he's on with us, and I said to him, when you're walking around that green, you're looking at that thing. I said to him, what are you thinking about? Like, and he said, the fact that I'm putting for the U.S. Open, the stakes of it, the result of it, what it would mean to make it or miss it, must never enter your mind. You cannot go, walk up to that green thinking, well, if I make this, I might win the U.S. Open, and if I miss this, I lose. No one with that thought in their head, not to suggest you would, it would be impossible to make the putt, but you would definitively not be maximizing your chance of making it. So that's where, and that's what, one of the great lessons I learned about golf, and I think this applies to a lot of things in life, when people talk about process, 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 that's where it really matters. When Nick Saban talks about process, 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 that's what he means. Tiger Woods walked up there and read that putt like he would read anything else, and he went through the exact, I mean, I'm sure we don't have this on tape anymore because I don't even remember when it was. It was sometime after that. But he went through like everything that was in his head, everything that was in his routine, everything that he does, and he didn't approach it, treat it, or putt it any differently than he would if this was the first hole of the Valspar Open instead of the 72nd hole of the U.S. Open to force a playoff. And it was a great, it was a really a great learning experience for me.
That's wild. That's also the last major that he won for 11 years. That was the
correct.
That was the on one leg
right.
major.
He then had to have surgery. He had knee surgery right after that. And you figured, all right, he'll come back from that and he'll never stay. And then all the stuff started happening in his personal life. And then he started having back problems. And then you figured it's all over. Yeah, that was his 14th major.
I want to say that we have a list in our next book, book number two, about some of the gutsiest performances in sports history. I want to say it's pretty high on that list.
I mean, he couldn't even walk. He couldn't walk, and he winds up winning the U.S. Open. And on fifth day, they had to go to another day.
It's a good list
for him
at.
To win. Yeah, so that was a that was outstanding. Anyway, I forgot what how we got
baseball
onto that
games
story.
Used to end in a tie.
Oh,
by the way,
baseball games used to end in a tie. That's how we got on that topic. Anyway, so mine would all my postseason weekend games would begin in the daylight. Bubba, if you were the commissioner of baseball and you could make one rule that could not be undone, what would it be?
I would eliminate two teams.
Do you have two in mind, or you just think there are two too many?
This Oakland situation doesn't seem to be going well, so unfortunately, probably get rid of them, and then probably Tampa, I guess. But yeah, I mean, we can figure that out later. I just think in general, we have too many teams. Hmm. And I think less teams means better baseball, and they're clearly just expanding for money. They're not making the game better when you have more teams. Less teams means better players are, you know, the fifth starter is the fourth starter, all that stuff is just they're pitchers are the players are just worse and worse and worse as we keep expanding the rosters and expanding the rosters, and they're clearly only doing that for money. So yeah, I would eliminate two teams, and I think it would make the product way better.
I'm in fact, I think you're not going far enough. I'd eliminate four and keep on going. Cam, how about you?
If you hit a grand slam with a 3-2 count and two outs, it's worth five runs.
I just always thought
that would be fun.
Like that's the kind of rule you would make up, like when you're a kid playing stickball, like in the street. Like, okay, but on a 3-2, like it's a home run is a home run, but on a 3-2 count, it counts for two runs.
Yes, you want
like,
a 4-pointer.
Those are
in
always
basketball.
A fun difference. Would you be in favor of a 4-pointer? Should they put a 4-point line in basketball?
No, I think they should eliminate the corner three. That's the change I would make in basketball.
Yeah, there actually was a movement towards that.
They're going to do something about the insane scoring environment of the NBA right now.
There actually are going to be, or at least might be, some interesting NFL rules changes that have been proposed by NFL teams, some of which might make all the sense in the world. And I'll tell you what those are, because they might just happen. Coming up next on ESPN Radio.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and The Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Greeny, the podcast. Earlier on Greeny.
And the barber takes one look down at me and he says, "Would you like us to wax your nostrils?" I said, "What the hell? Let's do this."
What? Come on.
I don't know why I didn't realize how much it was going to hurt.
Oh,
he yanks out that first one. Nothing has ever hurt like that in my life. It's astonishing. I came home in tears. I came home literally weeping. If anyone ever says, "Can I wax any part of you?" say no.
This is Greeny.
Greeny with you on ESPN Radio. Those are words to live by. In 30 seconds, we will give Bubba all the credit in the world. He found the soundbite that we were talking about. He found me asking Tiger Woods that question in 2008. And you'll hear that in 30 seconds after this from ESPN Bet, which is now live as the official sports book of ESPN. ESPN Bet is the only place to find daily exclusives and offers with your favorite ESPN personalities and shows. Sign up today. New users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Find all your favorite markets and bets like in-game wagering, cross-sport parlays, teasers, and all the props you can handle. That's ESPN Bet. Download today. What a play. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See the app for details. All right, a great job by Bubba. So I was just telling you the story of how we had Tiger Woods on. This was in 2008. Bubba went and found it. So it was in the fall of 2008. So a few months after he had beaten Rocco Mediate, and I was reminding people of the putt he had to make on the 72nd hole to force a playoff, which in those days was an 18-hole playoff in the U.S. Open, and how I just couldn't fathom the mental toughness that would be required to have all of that riding on the outcome of this putt. And for those of you who don't play golf, putting is a very delicate thing to do. Very delicate. Golf is counterintuitive to other sports. In football, in most sports, like the harder you try, usually the better you're going to do. I'm going to hit that guy harder. I'm going to run faster. Golf is the exact opposite of that. And putting in particular is something that requires such stillness and such evenness and such stability. And to find things like stillness and stability when the pressure is extraordinarily high, that is a gift I can't even fathom. Anyway, you will hear, I asked Tiger the question about what was going through his mind, and you will hear his answer. Hit it, Bubs.
When you were walking around the green, you're lining it up, you're setting it up, at any point did you allow the thought to go through your head, this is for the U.S. Open? If I miss this, I lose. Did you ever allow that thought to actually go through your mind?
No.
Never?
No, a putt was a ball and a half outside the right edge and be committed to releasing the putt and knock it in.
And that's it. I mean, like you treated it like it was any other putt you might be making under any other set of circumstances.
You just read the putt and just putt, yeah.
And he's not making that up. Like he's not just saying that. That's I have subsequently learned, because that was when I was really sort of in my infancy of learning golf and the psychology of it. But that's exactly what it is. And actually, if there were young people listening to this conversation, that is a great lesson for life. Like in life, don't think about, and I'm not suggesting you should forget the consequences of your actions. But when you're trying to accomplish something, don't think about the end goal. Think about the means. How do I get there? Like a great analogy for that is in football. Like the game is played on Sunday, but you don't wake up Monday morning thinking, okay, I need to win on Sunday. You wake up Monday morning thinking, this is what I need to do Monday to maximize my chance. And then this is what I need to do Tuesday and then Wednesday. And once you have stacked all those days together, by the time you get to Sunday, you have actually maximized your chance of winning on Sunday. And that is the way life works.
It's outstanding. It reminds me of conversations that you have had in the past with two people specifically. One, Nick Saban, who is so process-driven, which made him the greatest coach of all time, of course. And the other is Tom Brady's father. Hearing Tom Brady's father describe the way that his son views football, very similar. Like those, I suppose we shouldn't be surprised that there is that kind of thread of commonality between the three of them. But as Tiger was talking, those were two conversations to which I hearkened back.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Tom Brady Sr. has always been fascinating with us here. And that is what he said. He loves the stuff everybody hates. And that's why he played as long as he did. All right. So the NFL released a list of some of the rule changes that have been proposed by teams in advance of their annual owners meetings, which will be this month, later this month in Orlando. So this comes up because we were talking about when I become the commissioner of Major League Baseball, what are some of the changes that I would enact? And so it's nice to have here a list of fun rule changes that NFL teams have promoted. You tell me if you think this would be an interesting one. The Eagles proposed an onside kick alternative that would permit a team to maintain possession after a score if it converts a 4th-and-20 offensive play from its own 20-yard line. Now, for context, last year, teams recovered only 2 out of 41 onside kick attempts. I'll remind anyone who doesn't know, although I assume if you're listening to the show, you already do, onside kicks used to be something that teams had some chance of recovering. Certainly nowhere near a 50-50 chance, but they had a chance. And then for player safety rules, they changed around the way that the kicking team is allowed to move, how quickly they're allowed to act, and they have made it next to impossible for teams to recover onside kicks. To wit, only 2 out of 41 times has it happened. So if you're down 2 scores late in the game, you score a touchdown, you're still down a score, and there's 48 seconds left, rather than an onside kick, you would get the ball on your own 20-yard line, 4th-and-20, and you can go for it from there. And if you convert that 20-yard play, and then I assume this would mean, now you're on the 46-yard line, and you just keep on going. You like it or don't like it?
I like it a lot, because it would add a lot of drama to a lot more games. If you're down by multiple scores late, you know that scoring doesn't guarantee you much of anything because you have a 5% chance of getting the ball back. If they're going to basically make the onside kick recovery impossible, then the NFL, I think, should create another way by which the offense can retain the ball. And obviously, 4th-and-20 is a long shot, but it's an extremely exciting play. And it shouldn't be any more dangerous than any other 4th-down play, of course. So I would be in favor of the owners voting on this and saying yes.
Baba.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, like you said, I remember when I was younger, the onside kick was at least more of a thing. Now it's essentially useless. So I would like to see some sort of alternative because it's definitely not working. It's a joke now. So I agree. This would at least be far more exciting and fun. So I'd like to see something, because anytime they even line up now, it's just, okay, well, you might as well hand them the ball because they're not going to get it. So at least this way would provide some excitement. So I'm down for this. I like it.
Can you get the stats on that quickly? What did the recovery rate used to be?
I'll pull it up
on
right
onside
now.
Kicks? Do you like it or don't like it?
I like it, and I think they used it in the XFL last year to test it out. I forget if it was a 4th-and-15 or 4th-and-20, and it was like, you know, some exciting results at the end. So I think it could work for an experiment.
Yeah, you need to be careful of what yardage you make. You don't want to make it too easy. Like, that gets super gimmicky. Like, it can't be 4th-and-10, right? Like, you got to find, right, like, some fine line between what is and isn't convertible. Certainly teams are going to convert 4th-and-20 more than 2 out of 41 times. Do you have like onside kick rates before that?
Yeah, so it looks like basically since 2018 it's been impossible. For example, in 2017 teams went 12 for 56. And so that's one in 5-ish, which is, you know, that's
reasonable.
5 times more likely than it is now. I mean, right. It's happening 2 or 3 times a season in each of the last two. In 2020, 3 out of 67, whereas before you're looking at something between a 10 and 25% chance based upon season to season, which actually is a little more in line with what a 4th and 20 would be.
Right.
And I'm in favor of that idea. I think it's very clever.
Me too, because we're now at a place where, like, games are over. People continue to pay attention because of the point spread. So, like, if a team is down 14 points and the number is 6.5, you're going to continue watching because you're going to wait and see what happens. But if all you care about is who wins the game, if your team is down 14 with a minute left, the game's over. You're not going to get the onside kick. In fact, it's so anticlimactic.
By the way, if you go for it on 4th and 15, 225, anywhere in that range, a 16% chance historically to pull that off.
So that seems pretty much in line with what the old way used to be. I like that suggestion. It came from the Eagles.
I don't like that.
I give it a harumph. We'll see you tomorrow, ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Greeny, the podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN, and also available wherever you get your podcasts.